south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, let's start with a couple of emails. This one from Max, who says, Johnny, I've got to get the hell out of Dodge. She says, John, I live in Ventura County, California. This might interest you. Our utilities and electric have just tripled, certainly as a result of that Russian-Ukrainian thing. I lived in Ventura County for 20 years, she says, in a gorgeous little town. Sadly, it's saturated with people now from Los Angeles. We never had this kind of traffic, and now the roads are blocked every day. The quality of life and the sweet feeling is mostly gone, unless you trek into the wilderness. The boys used to be polite, no longer. She says, we're still lucky to have a ton of unspoiled land, and we fought hard for it. But housing is now completely unaffordable. A one-bedroom is $3,250 a month. It was supposed to be a wonderful place, the land of the free. I've spent 39 years looking for this freedom, still looking. I thought people would wake up, but they never will. They don't care. I'm leaving, and I'll miss my friends who wish they could escape. I'll miss the horses and I'll miss the easy access to the theater. But still, I have to leave. I'm going to Latin America. I have to be free. Signed, Max, one of the many Expat Insider Seminar alumni. Or is it alumnus? I forget. Well, thanks for that, Max. I get emails just like yours every day. People telling me they've had it. It's the last straw. I'm getting the hell out of Dodge. The hardest part, though, is to disconnect. Tell all your friends you're leaving and get packing. Because you're bound to get some resistance. What? Leave the good old US of A? Are you nuts? Some people find it's best not to say too much at all. You're just going on a long trip. Well, the fact is you won't leave if you've never visited other countries. That's the key. Then you've really got nothing to compare your ever-decreasing standard of living to. And that's one of the main reasons I've been having my Expat Insider Seminars for at least 10 or 12 years now. And of course, my latest one's coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks now, from March 17th through the 24th. 2023. It's the best way to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B. You could call it kind of an expat boot camp. People tell me that all the time. When you're constantly drinking from the fire hose, what else can you call it? But no one's been drowned yet. So anyway, you can still get on board. Just go to expatplanb.com, click on the seminar link, and you'll get all the info and sign-up details. All right, now, an email from Greg. He says, is it my perception or has there not been a solid segment you've done, Johnny, in a long time about expats who've come down and started their own businesses? He says, I recall years ago you talking about a guy who got into dog food. You mentioned a few other random and successful expat businesses that were started, other than Expat Eddie's adventures in the sushi business and Captain Mango's coffee plantation adventures. He said it'd be interesting to hear how other expats are making their mark down there. Whether it's expats with remote gigs or tech-savvy guys who seem to be able to run an online business from anywhere as long as they've got an internet connection. Then he ends it saying, saludos, Johnny. Signed, Greg. Well, Greg, I'm glad you brought that up. You know, years ago when I first started this show, when the internet was pretty rudimentary down here and pretty spotty too. Back then, almost no gringos or expats started internet businesses. There was no Amazon, eBay, or Shopify. If you had a product to sell, you'd have to make your own website and deal with the marketing and all that yourself. That meant gringos and expats who came on down who wanted to start a business had to sort of do a brick and mortar thing and or hook up with locals who made handcrafts or coffee producers. That way your market didn't have to be local. It could be first world or just the U.S. Let's face it, you don't get into the coffee business down here to sell your coffee to the locals. All the good stuff, or at least the cleverly marketed stuff, and that's where gringos come in, is exported to the first world. But I'll tell you, there's been a huge shift, especially since the COVIDia thing, a huge shift in thinking regarding starting a business here because of those COVIDia lockdowns where lots and lots of brick and mortar places just didn't survive. Just like up in the States, you know the drill. Therefore, there's been a huge trend towards gringos and expats starting internet businesses. So easy to do. Plus, they've found out there's a massive tax loophole. What's that tax loophole? Well, you can start an online or internet business down here without signing any paperwork or registering anything with the local government or the local tax authorities. So basically, all the money that comes in from your PayPal account, whatever, or your bank account is yours. Now, of course, we know gringos and expats are good, law-abiding citizens. Straight arrows, honest as the day is long. And on their honor to report such things, that is their true income to the local tax authorities. Just like all those mini-market owners and street vendors do, right? Which reminds me of a wise old saying, quote, "People are never cheap until they're spending someone else's money." That's the curse of the government employee, isn't it? Not that any gringo or expat would think of running a gray market business. Nevertheless, I just have to bring up the fact that once in a great while, that does seem to happen. You'll hear rumors. That said, and to address Greg's main point, lately, at least since the COVID thing, I'm seeing very, very few gringos and expats start brick-and-mortar businesses. It's just not happening. They're finding out, or they found out from others, that it's so much easier to start an online business. There's so much less risk and so little capital necessary for the initial startup costs that it's almost a no-brainer. Now, of course, lots of older gringos and expats come down, baby boomers and such, kind of stuck in the old analog ways, not much for doing internet stuff. Just not tech-savvy at all or confident enough to start an online business. So some of them still have dreams of starting a brick-and-mortar business. Airbnb, little hotel, mom-and-pop bakery, restaurant, or scuba diving business. But we're talking about boomers now. That'd be the over-60 crowd. You know, it doesn't really matter what age you are when you finally come down to Latin America. 60, 70, 80, you still have to have something to do. People might say they just like to retire, sit around, and fade into the sunset. But man, that's the quickest way to the retirement grave. You gotta have something to do. You have to stay busy, whether it's a hobby or two or 10 or starting a business. By the way, Expat Eddie just gave me his definition of how you could tell a boomer in 2 seconds. You ask them the following question, and if they get it, they're definitely boomers. It goes something like this. If Mama Cass and Karen Carpenter shared the same ham sandwich, would they both be alive today? Come on, boomers, you got it, right? Anyway, Greg and all you others out there who would like to hear about new gringo businesses, brick-and-mortar businesses. Well, I'd say the golden age of expats jumping in those waters with both feet is pretty much over. Though that's not to say expats and gringos aren't starting businesses all the time. They certainly are. But 90% of them these days are online or mostly online. Why pay rent, have office or business space, and have inventory when you don't have to? Though, of course, one positive secondary effect of the COVID thing is there are lots of boarded up storefronts and empty buildings. If you are thinking about doing a brick and mortar thing, you're in the driver's seat when it comes to negotiating the rent. Though I'd have to say, unless you have a really killer idea, you should stick to the online stuff and maybe sell on Amazon or Shopify. The reality is, here in Latin America, there is an unlimited supply of handcrafted items of all different kinds. The kind of stuff, if you marketed it and packaged it right, first world people would snap it up. Because that's where gringos and expats really excel. Another kind of gringo advantage are marketing and presentation skills, as well as writing advertising copy. Latinos are years behind us in that. And the only trick, the only big hoop to jump through is figuring out the shipping. And depending on your product, it could be no easy task. Because remember, you'd be shipping things over borders from country to country. All right, now a medical tourism boots on the ground story from Mike, who says, "Johnny, feel free to tell your listeners about my most recent 2 episodes of medical tourism." He starts by saying, "During this past winter, here in Texas, I need a particular neurological test performed without delay because my legs were in a state of constant pain, enough to inhibit sleep." He says, "At first I had the test done at a local clinic, but the doctor did a terrible job, despite it costing a ridiculous $650 for less than a half-hour session. Well, it didn't work out so well, and my primary care provider here in Texas apologized for what happened at that clinic and suggested that I have a test done properly at a nearby large state university, which supposedly had the best neurology clinic in the region. They told me it would cost almost as much as the first clinic charged me and that I'd have to wait about 3 months before seeing a doctor who could authorize the test through my insurance company. Even worse, I would then have to wait an additional 6 to 8 months before having the actual test performed, assuming that their audit committee didn't disallow the test. In other words, I'd have to wait a total of 9 to 11 months before having the needed test, assuming it was even allowed. Or, of course, pay the ridiculous amount out of pocket. Now, Johnny, being that I could barely sleep having this problem, waiting almost a year was not an option. So I immediately contacted Bumrungrad Hospital in Bangkok, Thailand, which is ranked as one of the best in the world for this kind of thing. Turns out I visited the place years earlier and had excellent care. I asked them how many months I would have to wait before I could have that test, and they said I could have the doctor appointment in a couple of days after my arrival in Thailand, and then the test on the next day. Needless to say, I immediately made my travel accommodations, and the doc did a terrific job for much less than what it would have cost me in the States. It's interesting to note, too, that 1 year ago, prior to that, I researched the cost of some needed shoulder surgery here in my area of Texas, and the average cost a jaw-dropping $22,000. He says I had no medical insurance then, so that was out of the question. I flew down to Puerto Vallarta instead. That's Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, where the procedure was done expertly for less than $5,000, and without the usual delay of weeks and months that one experiences in the U.S. now. Moral of the story? When shopping around for medical care, it pays to consider foreign options. Man, it really pays. Take care, Johnny. Signed, Mike. Well, thanks for that, Mike. You know, I get emails weekly with listeners telling me much the same thing. Many, if not most, of my expat friends, and me too, have had the same kind of experiences. And you know, the cool thing about getting that work done here in Latin America or elsewhere, I mean in any place outside the first world, is that you get a free trip or vacation out of it. In fact, more than a free trip and vacation. The savings will more than cover your air flight, your hotel, your expenses, and all the crazy things you might want to do or not, whilst visiting that faraway doctor, hospital, or clinic. But, and this is a big caveat, you have to do your homework. You just don't Google, for example, shoulder replacement clinics in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. God, I hate Google, but everybody uses that term, right? I never Google. I use the Brave browser or DuckDuckGo. Of course, you knew that already. But still, people use that universal term, Google it, even if they're not Googling it, when they're using a much safer, better, and more anonymous service like DuckDuckGo, StartPage, or the Brave browser. People that do the right thing can't get out of the habit of saying, I'll Google it, or you Google it, when they're not really Googling it. It's like saying, give me a Kleenex, when it's not really a Kleenex brand at all. By the way, I'm looking at my Brave browser stats right now. In the upper left-hand corner, when you're doing a Brave search, it shows you how many trackers and ads have been blocked, how much bandwidth has been saved, and how many hours you've personally saved by not having to click through all that spam and crap. Turns out since I've had my Brave browser activated about 2 years now, and I use it every day all the time, it says, congratulations, you've had 292,647 trackers and ads blocked by your Brave browser, which has saved you 4.1 hours of wasted time had they appeared on your screen and you had to check a box to get rid of them. Oh, and not to mention, the Brave browser eliminates all the frustration that goes with having to look at and get rid of all those stinking pop-up windows. Just saying. Oh, and here's something off-topic, but I have to mention it, or I'll forget. We all know up in the States the real estate market's bottomed out with high interest rates and such. It's in a huge slump, worse than dead flat. Well, the same thing's happening here in Latin America, except in a very few selected areas where real estate's booming, like in El Salvador. For example, in Colombia. I just got done reading a real estate report, in Spanish, of course, that says that the interest rates on homes are now 13 to 14%, you know, to get a mortgage, which pretty much wiped out the home sales market. It's down 50% over last year. One more thing about Colombia. You know, it's one of the most highly taxed countries in all of Latin America. If you own property there, a house or an apartment in a residential tower, whatever, you're going to pay 4 to 5 times as much in property taxes than you would if you were living in Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, Salvador, Panama, etc. Colombia's just taxing the hell out of people, especially businessmen and high earners. Which again, like I mentioned on a previous show, is why so much capital flight is going to places like my jammy. Of course, that means if you got a place worth, let's say, $300,000 in Colombia, you're going to be paying a couple of grand a year in property taxes. That's ridiculous. Property taxes there are almost at stateside levels. Oh, and like the U.S., they've got all kinds of other taxes, levies, and fees. And by the way, here's another article I caught coming out of Colombia. The title of it is pretty interesting and scary. Here's the title. How to understand the potentially costly laws regarding tax residence in Colombia. It's interesting because it applies to gringos and expats who want to live in Colombia or at least half the year. Basically, what the article says, if you're a foreigner and considered a resident in Colombia, responsible for paying all the taxes the locals do. And it says you are considered a resident in Colombia if you stay continuously or discontinuously in the country for more than 183 days a year. In other words, if your entry and exit stamps from the country put you there more than a half year in any period of 365 consecutive calendar days, you will be put on Colombia's tax rolls and pay every tax the locals pay. That's another reason why, personally, I wouldn't buy anything in Colombia right now. Though, I've looked for a lot of real estate in Medellin, Colombia. I went through a lot of places. There are some really nice ones, fairly cheap, because the Colombian peso is at an all-time low to the dollar, around 5,000 pesos to the dollar. That means you could get a really nice turnkey condo in a beautiful residential tower for around, more or less, $200,000. Even cheaper, depending. But considering the tax situation once you buy in the long run, it just doesn't make sense. Especially since their new socialist president states in his political platform, you can read it yourself, in Spanish, of course, that he intends to increase taxes on businesses, the wealthy, and the rich. Isn't that magnanimous of him? So, naturally, the business sector, which produces all the wealth for the country, you know, they're running scared. Makes you wonder why there are so many nice apartments and houses with really high-end material, built to very high standards, going so cheap. And yet there's a 50% drop in sales over last year. Makes you wonder why there's a huge outflow of capital and money out of the country instead of massive inflows. Though I think you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out why. By the way, that's a misnomer too. Rocket science isn't really that hard. Oh, it was back in the 60s when computers were dinosaurs, but not anymore. Hell, these days, a cheap smartphone could plot the trajectory and all the possible coordinates for a moonshot or a Mars land. So, rocket science, but ain't what it's cracked up to be. So, I'm guessing it's time to retire that saying. What do you think? How about let's stick with it's not brain surgery? That still works. Meanwhile, back at the email pile, we got this one from Doug. He says, good evening, Johnny. Hope all is well. You hit the mark on the episode last week about El Salvador when you discussed President Bukele and the gang problem. You were spot on as always. The photos I'm sending you in this article exemplify exactly what you were saying about how you tell who is a gang member and who is not. They have uniforms, you know. They're called tattoos. Massive, full coverage tattoos. He says, if you notice in the photos in the video I sent you about the new prisons in El Salvador, not a single prisoner in all of those photos is free of full coverage tattoos. Even the photo with them all sitting asshole a belly button, it's a solid wall of tattoos. So, Johnny, I'm with you. In my humble opinion, those NGO do-gooders do what they do best to stay employed. They play the system by whining about human rights violations. Isn't that phrase getting kind of old, kind of tired? In fact, he says, as an example, a few years ago, a couple of stupid dunces thought it would be cool to have gang tats put on themselves. They thought, hey, why not? But they weren't in a gang. Well, the gang sent out swallows, otherwise known as pretty girls, who lured those boys into the woods where the gang members tortured, killed, and dismembered them. Because, you see, appropriating a gang tattoo is the ultimate diss of that gang. So I repeat, Johnny, your gang tats are your uniform. As for me, Johnny, I live in one of the most taxed counties in the USA. And in the past year, the numbers of murders, shootings, robberies, etc. have been insane. That'd be my reason, 642, he says, for having a plan B. As always, Johnny, just keep on keeping on with the good, bad, the ugly, and the great. Signed, Doug, from the Socialist Republic of Montgomery County, Maryland, USA. By the way, he sent me a link to an article from the UK Daily Mail highlighting Bukele and those prisons in Salvador. In fact, as it turns out, Bukele commissioned a 3-minute video showing how they handle the prisoners. It's amazing. If you want the link, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Anyway, if you see this video, and I highly recommend it, you'll see that in this group of maybe 2,000 gangster prisoners, it shows how they process those psychopaths. You'd be surprised. It's very clean and efficient. They must have 100,000, I'm not kidding, 100,000 tattoos between them. And I'll tell you, the way they've got these guys shackled together and jumping through hoops, quite a few, I'd say most, of those formerly cocky asswipes look like they're seriously beginning to question and regret some of those life choices they made. Though you got to admire the way those whiny-ass journalists at the UK Daily Mail captioned some of these photos. Like, for example, it says, under one photo, showing these guys all lined up like dominoes, it says, some 63,000 presumed gang members have been rounded up since President Bukele declared a state of emergency months ago. Presumed. So then what about all the gang symbols inked onto their bodies? Are they presumed gang symbols? Are they those fun kitty tattoos that wash off in the shower? By the way, President Bukele and all his staff and administration are calling this new prison the Terrorist Confinement Center. Yep, that's what they're referred to as, terrorists, and they are. And of course, NGOs and civil rights groups are criticizing the construction as a violation of incarceration standards. Because, you know, murderers and rapists have rights, too. Just ask that open border Muppet with the metal plate in his head. I think his name's Biden. Oh, and you gotta love that they're treating these guys like the animals they are. It says here, while the prison is equipped with dining halls, exercise rooms, and ping pong tables, unfortunately, those amenities are for exclusive use by the guards only. Now, as for me, Johnny, just my worthless opinion here, I have just one question for those whiny, do-gooder NGO stooges. Please tell me how someone who purposely does not act or behave like a human being, how can you say that when that person gets to jail, he can be dehumanized by the system? Because that's what those NGO fools are whining about. They're saying Bukele is dehumanizing the poor tattooed masses. I say the gangsters ought to be happy that Bukele is not decapitating them. That's their form of justice. Hell, that's what Muslims do to criminals under Sharia law. You've seen the photos of what these gangsters do to people. They decapitate people and hang them upside down from bridges. You've seen those photos. These guys aren't just run-of-the-mill killers who made a little mistake. They're the worst kind of irredeemable psychopaths who absolutely get off on extreme brutality. There's no psychiatrist in the world whose counseling will turn these guys around. Each one of these guys is a Hispanic Charles Manson. Man, I'm just so sick of these woke do-gooders living in their nice, guarded, gated, protected Malibu neighborhoods. But I digress as usual. All right, end of rant. Moving on. I've got an email here from Mr. A, who in fact is an American lawyer. He says in response to one of my rants a while back about how when you go to a Price Mart or a Costco down here in Latin America, on your way out, there's a guy or gal checking every item in your cart, making sure you don't have sticky fingers. Now, if you recall, I mentioned that gringos generally get a big pass on that. You just smile, show them the receipt, they put a check mark on it, and don't even look at anything. You pass right through. And when we were discussing that, I asked a question. Does that happen in the States, too? You go to a Costco or whatever. Are they going through your stuff and checking it against your receipt on the way out? What do I know? I haven't been back to the States since brain-dead Bush was president. Anyway, Mr. A says in his email, yes, Costco does the honesty check bullshit, as do many private non-membership stores. Although, they do it far less now, especially after I, he says, successfully sued them for it in 1998, and he sends me a link to the lawsuit complaint. Very interesting, Mr. A. I'm looking at the complaint now, and it says he filed against Best Buy in Georgia. Good for you, Mr. A. By the way, there's another thing they do down here in Latin America, and I never see them do up in the States. Well, I never did, way back when. And I can't believe they're doing it now. Anyway, when you buy something in a Costco or any store, let's say you buy a TV or a lamp. After you've paid for it, they'll lead you to another desk, where a guy will take a razor blade cutting tool, open the box, take everything out in front of you. You have to look at it. You'll have to give him the nod that everything looks okay. It's all there. No broken parts, no missing parts. Then he'll seal the box back up with tape, and you're out of there. It's easy to see why they have a tradition of doing that, because in the past, anyway, it was just murder to try to return something in practically any store here in Latin America. It's so different from when you buy something up in the States. You get the box, you go out, you open it at home, check it out. If it doesn't work, there's a part missing or broken, you bring it back. In the States, you generally have something like 30 days to do that, right? As long as you have the receipt. That kind of return policy is only true here in Latin America with certain kind of stores that are franchised from the States, like Walmart, Costco, Ace Hardware, etc. Their return policies are the same universally in all countries. But with other stores, especially pure Latin-based stores, like, for example, Elektra, a big Latin American appliance store chain, they might only give you 24 to 48 hours to return something. Now, of course, if you buy a brand name item like a Whirlpool dryer or a Black & Decker drill, it'll come with the factory warranty. And they do have service centers, so if it does break under guarantee or warranty, you will get satisfaction. Black & Decker, Whirlpool, Milwaukee Tool, Bosch, all the big brand names have service centers. So, not to worry. However, there is one caveat. Let's say you come down to Latin America and you've got a drill, a Bosch drill. You bought it in the States or on Amazon. It's got a year warranty. That's normal, right? Well, not so fast. Sometimes those companies, even highly respected first world companies like Bosch or Milwaukee Tool, whatever, won't honor a guarantee from something that was bought up in the States. Only if it was bought here in Latin America. Oh, you can get it fixed, all right. Like I said, they have service centers. But they just might not honor your warranty. It's hit and miss. And finally, we have this little screed from Mr. Fred. It's a warning, so pay attention to this. It starts out, I have a foreboding of an America in my children's or grandchildren's time when the United States is a service and information economy, when nearly all the manufacturing industries have slipped away to other countries, when awesome technological powers are in the hands of a very few, and no one representing the public interest can even grasp the issues. I see, when people have lost the ability to set their own agendas or knowledgeably question those in authority, when people clutch their crystals and nervously consult their horoscopes, our critical faculties are in decline. There'll be a time when we're unable to distinguish between what feels good and what's true. We'll slide, almost without noticing, back into superstition and darkness. The dumbing down of America is most evident in the slow decay of substantive content in the media whose influence is so enormous. The 30-second soundbite, now down to 10 seconds or less, signals the lowest common denominator programming. Credulous presentations on pseudoscience and superstition will arrive and people will believe, and there'll be a kind of celebration of ignorance. Can you guess who said that and when? It was Carl Sagan back in 1995. 28 years ago. Man, did he peg it right. And that was before widespread internet. That was before even the iPhone. By the way, a while back I read his biography. Did you know he smoked a doobie a day? He said it was a sort of creative lubrication for the mind. Well, Mr. Fred, thanks for that spot-on prediction by old Carl Sagan. Mr. Billions and Billions himself.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.